It really is Tatanka being owned by the last century, the corporate mind, and somehow the desire to keep splitting the atom and keeping the planet at risk. I mean, it's amazing we're having this discussion, Tatanka, when we see a war happening around Chernobyl and the largest nuclear reactor in Europe, and it sort of somehow doesn't sink into the liberal governor of California that it's not the right direction. It's frightening.
I choose to believe that they see the end. They see their liabilities. They're fighting it tooth and nail. And I choose to believe that if the people really get organized around this, we are gonna win this. We have to decommission all the nukes in the world. Okay, that has to happen. And I think that it's so ironic. We got both Ron DeSantis and Governor Newsom look and see in Florida and in California, 8 out of 10 people support rooftop solar. DeSantis is playing politics by basically supporting rooftop solar. But what he says and what he does is two different things. Governor Newsom is playing politics by siding with the nuclear industry because he figures we have no place to go. Larger picture is that we need to do progressive.
I'm sorry, we're out of time now. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Tatanka. We're out of time now.
Okay.
Is there an address that you'd like to give out if people want to get more information, understand what your battle looks like?
There's a website, yes. solarrights.org, Solar Rights Alliance.
Yes.
You can support that. And you can write me directly, Solartopia at Gmail. And
we can invite people to come to that incredibly important weekly meeting that you started, election protection and all the issues that we need protection from our politicians, and they can check that out too. We're out of time, so just check out Harvey, Google him, and you'll find out all this information. I'm Dennis Bernstein. The show is Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio.
KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Finance Committee meets the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify that a meeting is needed.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the Portland Folk Music Society concert series starting Saturday, September 17th with singer-songwriter Tim Grimm. The folk music series of 9 Saturday concerts starts September 17th and continues through May of 2023 at the Reedwood Friends Church on Southeast Steele. Season tickets are now available. Ticket information can be found at kboo.fm under Community Events.
One, two, three, four. Welcome to Beyond Your Front Door, your adventure guide to the Central Oregon coast. I'm your host, Dina Pavlis. I'm excited to be on the phone today with Jesse Jones. Jesse is the Coast Watch Volunteer Coordinator with Oregon Shores Conservation Coalition. We'll be talking all about Coast Watch and how you can get involved in this fun and exciting program. Jesse, welcome to the show.
Thank you for your interest in Coast Watch.
Yeah, I'm super excited to have you here. Can you share a little bit about your background and how you became involved with Coast Watch?
Sure. Before I came to Coast Watch, I worked for more than a decade on projects in Northwest Oregon related to freshwater streams, rivers, estuaries, and the ocean. And my work has encompassed outreach to farmers for streamside restoration to create healthy salmon habitat, timber companies to remove disused roads along creeks and then planting them with native trees and shrubs, to writing and receiving a grant for a native plant nursery in my hometown of Vernonia, where I grew up on the upper Nehalem River watching salmon spawn, to facilitating a partnership between two small water districts. So I have worked as an employee and or contractor for watershed councils, special districts, counties, cities, all with water as a central element. And when I adopted my own mile with Coast Watch, I was a volunteer with Surf Rider Foundation, leading the Blue Water Task Force here on the North Coast. The Blue Water Task Force trains volunteers to collect ocean water and then test it for fecal coliforms. So I was a Coast Watch volunteer before I was an employee.
Wow, that's a great background. And it's so great that you were a volunteer before you came in as the volunteer coordinator here. Let's talk a little bit about what is Coast Watch and how are they affiliated with Oregon Shores Conservation Coalition?
So Coast Watch is one of a number of programs of the Oregon Shores Conservation Coalition. The Oregon Shores Conservation Coalition was founded in 1971, and it was actually created from the activists who helped pass the beach bill into law. After they had done their wonderful thing, they thought, how can we make sure that that law is actually followed? And so they created a group, the Oregon Shores Conservation Coalition. Then, maybe 25 years later, Coast Watch was formed. So Coast Watch is a mile-by-mile beach adoption program where volunteers walk a mile of the beach and kind of look out for changes, both natural and man-made, and take photographs and then report those changes. These days, we do that online in a fillable form, but back in 1993, that was a paper form that you would fill out and then mail in.
You know, what's interesting is I'm a mile adopter, although I haven't been out for a while, I'm sorry to say. But of course, I've always done it on computer, and it didn't even occur to me that it would have had to be done by paper originally.
Yes, and then that paper would have to take a little bit of time to travel.
Yeah, exactly.
To the original Coast Watch coordinator, Philip Johnson, who is now the director of the Oregon Shores Conservation Coalition. Now it's much quicker to file a report, and those reports, I actually publish them myself, and then they are available on our website under the Tour of Miles, where you can at any time look to see which miles have been reported on and what volunteers are saying about them and photos to accompany them.
Yeah, it's super interesting. And I notice you've been sharing some of those reports or pieces of them and photos on your social media as well recently, which has been really exciting to see.
Yeah, it's wonderful. We have a new communications person named Katie Russell, who is really helping to expand what's on our website to social media and get the word out there, sharing those reports in social media. It's another great way to share them.
Yeah, she's doing a great job. What is the website if somebody wanted to go and look at this information?
OregonShores.org, and then you'll see a Coast Watch tab at the top. Under there, you'll see everything from what we're about to the tour of the miles and how to adopt a mile, among other things.
Well, that leads me to a question. How many volunteers or mile adopters do you currently have?
We have over 700 volunteers and mile adopters. And most of our miles, I think, over the years have been adopted. Some report on their miles once a month. We ask volunteers to report once per season. So some miles are reported on pretty regularly. Some miles may have adopters that may have moved away or haven't reported on them in some time. So sometimes we have one volunteer per mile, sometimes we have a few, which is great because the tide changes the beach every day. So it's okay to have a few different mile adopters for 1 mile. I might add as well that it's not just individual volunteers that adopt miles, but it is also schools, nonprofit groups, the Marine Reserves are mile adopters, some businesses. So it really runs the gamut of who can adopt a mile.
Oh, that's really great to know. Are there any miles that are too rugged or difficult to access, or does every mile have an adopter at this point?
There are some miles that encompass headlands, and those miles are only accessible by a kayak or from above. Volunteers can take their own risks. We actually do have some who report on some coves in Cascade Head, which is really exciting. A group of volunteers down there have recently been removing some trash in the coves, and so they get out there and report. There are others who can't access their mile, so they hang out above their mile. They look down, you know, at the seabirds that are nesting on the cliff, and they report just what they see from above.
So are any of those miles monitored by drone, or are drones not really acceptable because they might disturb the nesting birds that you just spoke about?
Right. So drones cannot approach or disturb wildlife. And I have not had a drone report. I have not had a report from a Coast Watcher yet that has used a drone. Drone use is allowed on most beaches with some restrictions. And actually, Oregon Parks and Rec Department is currently in the process of drafting new rules for operating drones within state parks and along the coast. So state parks can restrict operating a drone in certain areas or certain times of the year to protect public safety or wildlife, such as western snowy plovers. But I haven't had anyone use a drone quite yet. I imagine that may happen in the future, but hopefully that drone operator will know the rules.
I think this is a good moment to maybe just remind listeners who do have drones to look into what the rules are at each location. For example, at Hasita Head Lighthouse, they do have a sign restricting drone use because of the nesting shorebirds there, but it's only in one location. And a lot of people, as a volunteer at the lighthouse, I've noticed that a lot of people don't see the sign. And so they do come out with the drones, and those drones cause the nesting shorebirds that are nesting on the rocks there to fly off of the nests, leaving the eggs and chicks unprotected. So it's definitely important to look into the rules and the ethical use of the drones wherever you're going to use them along the coast.
That's exactly right, and that's a very good point. And it also highlights the need for education amongst beachgoers, which I love to share with our volunteers, that they can educate themselves and then share with other beachgoers. Like, for example, there are a number of snowy plover nesting areas on the coast. Some of them are pointed out with heavy signage, but not all of them. Also, there are black oyster catchers that nest in our rocky habitats. Some of them have nests low enough to disturb even like the dogs and humans. And so one area of Coast Watch that I really love is sharing information about nesting birds and critical habitats with the volunteers so that they can share this information with others.
Yeah, that's great, because one of the things you mentioned, snowy plovers, is sometimes if they're driven off the nest more than once or twice, they just don't come back. They'll abandon the nest. So, or the wind, if it's windy, the sand may cover that nest before they return, and then it's lost. So definitely good information for people to be aware of. I'm glad you guys are working on that. Well, yeah. Jesse, I'm a mile adopter, as I mentioned, and I'm embarrassed to tell you that I don't get out there as often as I like due to my busy schedule, especially with this radio show. But this does mean that I know a little bit about adopting a mile, and that I know it's not just a walk on the beach. There are certain things that you need to observe and record. And I was wondering if you could share a bit about what adopters look for when they are walking a mile.
Yes, and you aren't the only one. You can find yourself in some good company of folks who have adopted Miles and haven't reported for a long time, but it's never too late to come back. And also, I encourage volunteers who may have observation sheets laying around that they can upload them at any time, and they will go into our system chronologically.
Great.
So for, like, if you walk the beach in January of 2021, and you still haven't uploaded your information, it's not too late to do that. Mm. I just wanted to kind of put that in there. So the Coastwatch form itself is a pretty basic observational form. It is not a scientific protocol. And at this time, we are actually working on developing a new Coastwatch form. So I would love to come back and talk about that.
Absolutely.
When that happens, our program will be changing, hopefully in the next year. At this time, our observational form, which is about 25 years old, we ask people to really check out your beach access. Where are you coming into the beach? And to count human beings, count any animals you see, dogs, any wildlife you see, to note where the tide is when you began your walk, to note any erosion, any developments that have happened, like new staircases, for example, fencing, homes, that kind of a thing. Now, Coastwatch actually started before there were beach rangers. And so Coastwatch and the rangers work together, Coastwatch volunteers and rangers work together pretty closely now to identify, like, development that wasn't permitted, for example. So a Coastwatch form is a basic form. But over the last, I don't know, maybe 10 years or so, we have a number of volunteers who want to get more deeply involved. And so I connect our volunteers with scientists and researchers to perform citizen science on their mile and community science on their mile. So we work with a number of partners in that way. One of those partners, for example, is the Coastal Observation and Seabird Survey Team, known as COAST with two S's, and they are out of the University of Washington. And that is a beached bird program, also known as dead birds on the beach. So we have coast watchers who, in addition to their basic observational sheet for Coast Watch, they are also collecting data on dead birds as well. And they give that information to the COAST program. We have others who are involved in a marine debris survey program. We also have the SeaStar survey program. We are also partners with the Marine Mammal Stranding Institute, who you talked to last week. So while you're walking on your mile, if you see a dead sea lion or a dead shark or a dead whale, you will report that on your Coastwatch form, but then there is a link on the form there where you will also report that to the Marine Mammal Stranding Institute. So when you're walking your Coastwatch miles, there are a number of other opportunities while you're walking that mile to collect information for scientists and researchers in California, Oregon, and Washington.
Wow, that's super exciting. I love that you've gotten all of that connected. And I just wanted to mention that COAST, the COAST, they will be coming on the show this fall as well. So I'm super excited about that. And we did just have Jim Rice from the Oregon Marine Mammal Stranding Network on the show. So this is great because it's all kind of tying together here. I'm pretty excited about
that.
Yeah,
that's wonderful.
So speaking of this form, let's say somebody does see a violation, you know, all of a sudden they've come out and there's a new staircase or, and you know, maybe it's a violation. They don't know, right? But it's some mm-hmm. kind of change, or somebody has mowed down a 4-dune of beach grass, which happened on Hasita Beach, I remember about 15 years ago or so. When they put that report in, is there something they check to make sure that you guys see that right away, or are they encouraged to also do another step to report something like that?
That's a really good question and something I've been working on since I started this job in the middle of 2019. So like I mentioned, Coastwatch volunteers existed before beach rangers did. So before beach rangers, Coastwatchers are really the only ones monitoring the beaches. Sometimes I think maybe state police, but it was mostly Coastwatchers. And like I told you, there was a paper form. So how could anything immediate happen if you saw something, right? So the idea now is that when someone becomes a Coastwatch volunteer, I try to give them as much information about their local ranger and what the rules and regulations are on that beach. You know, is that beach in a marine reserve, for example? because if it is, then we need to know what the rules are for collecting and fishing and that type of thing.
Right.
So the idea is that once someone adopts a mile, they know that beach. They know what the rules are. They know who the local ranger is. They know when to call the police. They know when to call state parks. So rather than inundating state parks with calls that maybe they don't need, for example, that volunteer will know. They'll be armed with that information and education so they know what to do if they need to call or not. We have some resources on our website, but when I send a welcome email, I try to fit everything in there that they might possibly need. So we have a section in our report that is for violations. Did you see a violation? And you record that. And then there's another section that said, did you take action? And then people, if they did take action, they will say, yes, I called Oregon State Parks and reported this. If they didn't, I will contact them right away and ask if they did. Like, if I don't see an indication in their form, I will ask them if they did or didn't, and then I will help them or they will do it. So the idea is to educate beachgoers, to educate volunteers about the rules on our beaches.
Yeah, I think that's really good. And speaking about education, what type of training do you offer? And I just want to mention that I signed up so long ago that there wasn't like online training or anything like that at the time. So for someone like me, is it possible to still attend a training session? Because I'm not sure what I don't know.
Yeah, so we have something now called Coastwatch Orientations, and these are on the beach walks that will take you through a Coastwatch form. We actually have one coming up on September 17th at Harris Beach. That is on the south coast in Coos County, I believe.
Okay.
That will be led by naturalist Marty Giles. I believe that starts at 10 or 11, but you can look on our website under the featured events and it will be there. And we are also looking to create a quick video that will be available on our website, and it will kind of go through the form and kind of show you how to fill out that form and what to look for. So that should be coming relatively soon when we get our new form created.
I'm excited about that, and definitely when you get those done and you're ready to launch that, let me know and we can have you back on the show and talk about that. That'd be great.
That would be great. Thanks.
So, Jesse, Coastwatch has an exciting fall challenge coming up. Can you share a bit about that?
Yes. We have decided to do a fall bio blitz along the entire Oregon coast, mile by mile. So it's through iNaturalist. iNaturalist is a free app, and it actually was created out of the California Academy of Sciences. And we were inspired by the California kind of Snapshot California Coast, which is a program that California started, which was to capture the biodiversity of California's coast. So on the Oregon coast, there are bioblitzes that are held in our marine reserve every year, but not on every mile of the coast. They're mostly kind of centered around the marine reserve in the summer months. What a bioblitz is, it's heading to an area and kind of capturing everything that you can see that is wild and alive. You would take pictures of seaweeds, plants, dune flora and fauna, life in the tide pools, and then you would upload that into our project, which is the Coastwatch Fall Challenge. And this begins in 16 days. So it starts on September 25th and it goes through October 2nd. Anytime during those 10 days, you can head down to your mile, or like I said, if you aren't a coast watcher, you can also participate in this, and you would just take photographs of what you see and try to get some close-ups as well. So you can get onto the iNaturalist site, which is also a website as well, so you don't need to use your smartphone. You can also use a camera, and you can participate that way as well. The cool thing about iNaturalist is it is kind of overseen by scientists all over the world and others who are interested in knowing what is alive and happening outside. So let's say you take a picture of a sea star, and you don't know exactly what type of sea star it is, but you take a picture and you upload it into the project. The way that it works, the computer will identify it as closely as it can. Like, it might say, this looks like an ochre sea star, and it will actually name it for you. if it needs to be corrected, it'll be corrected by a human. So then people get on there and they're like, oh, no, actually, this is not an ochre sea star. This is a blood star. But they actually look very different. So that's a pretty terrible example. But that's kind of how it works. You can guess yourself as well. You can say, I think this is a black oyster catcher, for example. But if your guess is wrong, or if the computer's guess is wrong, then someone out there will add a comment and say, actually, this is this species.
That's great. And are you offering any type of training for this?
Yes, we are. We don't have a date for that training yet, but as soon as it's available, it'll be on our website under featured events. However, we have had iNaturalist trainings in the past for a number of other projects that we partner on. So there are a number of different trainings that you can see on our YouTube channels, but also online. But we will, as soon as we get something, we will put it on our website.
Great. That's exciting. So people, I'm assuming, can also follow you on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and hear about the training there as well.
That's correct.
So, Jesse, one of my favorite parts of this show is asking people to share a favorite memory or experience. Do you have a favorite memory or story related to your involvement with Coastwatch that you'd like to share?
Well, I started this job the summer before the pandemic, so I didn't really get a spring out in the field, and it was actually late summer that I began, so I didn't get to meet a lot of our volunteers until recently. It has just been wonderful to finally get out this summer and meet people on the beach, meet volunteers, meet partners who I'd only seen from the shoulders up, and to be out on the beach with them and learn from them.
Wow.
That has been the most exciting thing since I started this job, really, to learn from others while I am walking with them in their communities, on their local beach, and getting out in nature with the public. It feels novel, even though it's a very normal thing. This summer, it's felt pretty exciting and new, being in the company of so many who care about their beaches, their rocky areas, and to really meet so many incredible volunteers who are doing a lot in community science and citizen science, and just witnessing how hard they work contributing to research. It's wonderful. I think that one of my favorites has been, there's a group of volunteers on the North Coast, Chapman and Inicola Point, that every summer they monitor the black oyster catchers, and I help them as well when I can on the weekends for the super low tides, getting down there into these wild places and just watching the oyster catchers, these beautiful birds that, like I mentioned earlier, live in these and in our rocky, like close rocky shores and on the close rocky islands. They are a species of concern. They have very cute little chicks that come out fluffy and cute. And oftentimes these birds are plucked away, these chicks, and don't always make it surviving to fledglings. But when they do, it's very exciting and something worth celebrating. And there have been some chicks that have fledged, and it's always exciting to see these volunteers so happy. But yeah, getting out there and helping to monitor these baby chicks is pretty special.
That's exciting. I love black oyster catchers. I think they're so beautiful, too, with their bright orange bill and eyes and feet. They're just incredible to see. Jesse, I love that story. I'm just going to take a moment to let listeners know, if you tuned in late, you've been listening to Beyond Your Front Door, produced for the Pacifica Radio Network in the studios of KXCR in beautiful downtown Florence, Oregon. I've been speaking with Jesse Jones. Jesse is the Coastwatch Volunteer Coordinator with Oregon Shores Conservation Coalition. If you are interested in adopting a mile or participating in the Fall Challenge, you can find out more at their website at oregonshores.org/coastwatch. Jesse, we are just about out of time. Is there anything else that you would like to share before we wrap up?
I just want to thank you for having me on to learn more about Coastwatch, and I would encourage anyone who wants more information to head to our website or shoot me an email, And I would also encourage everyone to get out, know the rules of the beach, and enjoy.
That's great. Jesse, thanks so much for taking time to be here. It's been such an interesting show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, too. It was fun.
Today's Nature Sound is... Stay tuned. I'll be back in 35 seconds to let you know who makes that sound. Listeners who use information from this program to venture outdoors do so at their own risk. Outdoor activities may be hazardous and must be carefully evaluated for each listener based on that person's circumstances. KXCR and the individuals involved in this program, Pacifica Radio, or any station airing this program do not assume any liability from the use of any information presented. By using this information to enjoy your own coastal adventures, you assume all potential risks and agree to hold Pacifica Radio, KXCR, its affiliates, any station airing this program, and the presenters harmless from any resulting liability. Here's that nature sound again. The first time I saw red-necked phalaropes, they were swimming in their distinct circling or spinning pattern on a large pond in the Oregon Dunes. Recently, an immature red-necked phalarope landed in my backyard. While I am close to the ocean and some larger ponds, my backyard is not a normal place to see them. I began to wonder if perhaps the bird had somehow escaped the clutches of a bald eagle. It's not unheard of to find a seabird inland that has escaped a predator. One of the most interesting things about phalaropes is that the females are the larger and more brightly colored of the species. Females sometimes get into brutal fights over males and will court the male they desire by swimming around him, eventually luring him into following her. After laying eggs, females leave it to their male counterparts to care for the eggs and chicks while they seek out another male and repeat the mating and egg-laying process. Chicks leave the nest in about a day and feed themselves. The male remains with them for about 2 weeks and then flies off. Chicks, however, are unable to fly until about 3 weeks of age. Missed a show recently? You can find all of our shows on SoundCloud.com. Just search for Beyond Your Front Door Oregon and look for The Wave. Are you interested in what's coming up on Beyond Your Front Door? Check us out on Facebook and Instagram at Beyond Your Front Door Oregon. Have an idea for a show you would like to hear? Email me.